Welcome to Season 9 of the HPS Cast. I'm your host, Colbert Cannon. If you're new to the pod, HPS is a global investment firm. We manage just over $100 billion in assets for a broad range of institutional and individual investors. That capital is invested across private credit and public credit strategies. Each week, I sit down with key relationships to, partners of, and friends of the firm to learn from their experience, ask how that experience shapes their current roles, and give insights into HPS and how we operate. So with that, let's bring in our guest. Our guest this week is the CIO of one of the largest insurance companies in the world. He got his undergraduate and graduate degrees at Bocconi in Milan before starting his career in finance at JP Morgan, later Deutsche Bank. In 2005, he started at the insurer Allianz Group, where over 8 years he served in several management positions in Italy and in Germany. He then moved over to Generali Group, Italy's largest insurance company, in 2013, joining as their head of group asset liability management and strategic asset allocation. He's been at Generali ever since, becoming CIO and CEO first of the Generali Asset Management Business Unit, and then in 2021, he became the Group Chief Investment Officer of Generali itself, overseeing an approximately 400 billion euro global portfolio. This gentleman and Generali have been key partners to HPS for many years now, and we are honored by their support. So, without any further ado, I'm excited to welcome in this week's HPS Cast guest, Francesco Martorana, Group CIO at Generali. Francesco, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Colbert. My pleasure being here.
Okay, Francesco, as listeners know, I like to go all the way back to start. Where did you grow up? Where are you from originally?
I was born and grew up in Milano, so Lombardy in the north of Italy.
So then tell me about university. You ended up at Bocconi. Why was that the right choice for you?
Since I was a child, I wanted to be a lawyer. You know, you look at movies, TV series, and you say, okay, this is what you want to do. I had the opportunity to do a training and go to a court together with the real judge and the lawyer. And you realize the work is different from what you see on TV. And then all of a sudden, the passion and the interest for financial markets started. I started reading magazines, books, and so on. And then I said, I want to study finance. I was lucky because being in Milano, there was Bocconi offering the training. And so I went there and so far it was a good career track.
By the way, I had the exact same experience, was sure I wanted to be a lawyer. And then somebody pulled me aside and said, all the fun stuff's happening over in finance, not on the law side. Okay, so tell me, Francesco, you got your first job in bond sales, if I had it right, at JP Morgan. Tell me about that first opportunity out of school for you. What were you doing?
Yeah, basically, the daily activity was to prepare a sales briefing for the sales team, getting the calls from the clients, and then having the trader on the other side and providing quotes and getting the trade done. So it was sort of funny. I learned a lot. Of course, JP Morgan is a very big house with a lot of research and was still the old way of doing trading. So nothing electronic, was everything voice. So especially when you were talking, I remember and calling the emerging market traders in New York, you have to be very sure of what you ask in terms of quote, and also conventions for emerging market bonds like trading flat of accrual and so on, no? Because yeah. you can make big mistakes.
No, interesting stuff. So you then moved over to Deutsche Bank. It sounds like doing sort of similar things. What were you doing over at Deutsche Bank?
Yeah, that was slightly different in the sense that the coverage was more for corporates and municipals and local authorities. So there the job was to analyze mainly their existing debt, proposing refinancing solution, interest rate risk management solutions like swaps, caps to manage the liability cost. So that was more on the liability side, very insightful as well, because you deal with very different clients from a financial institution. And so you understand the needs. So the level of sophistication, of course, is very different. But you see the same market from another angle.
Yeah, it's a broadening of the skill set, I'm sure. After that, you make the move over to Allianz and into the insurance business, where you've been ever since. Why, Francesco? Why was that the right time for you to leave banking and move to the insurance side of the world?
That was sort of, last minute choice. Mainly actuaries were trained to work in insurance companies. I remember we were studying banks, asset managers, brokers, but never insurance companies as financial intermediaries, as investors. or to a very limited extent. And so then I started to look into the sector, and I was curious to understand the liability, the products, and then the asset side. It was also the early days of developing Solvency II and evolving towards more economic view of the balance sheet. And so I got attracted from this, and at that point in time, RAS was controlled but not yet fully owned by Allianz, and RAS was together with Generali, actually the most sophisticated and largest Italian insurer, and they had a very strong reputation, especially on the investment side. And so I was lucky and gifted because I joined, let's say, a team that had a strong reputation in Italy when it came to skills and motivation.
So tell me about it, Francesco. What was that first role that you stepped into in Allianz? What were you doing?
When I started, I was actually in the desk taking care of the portfolio management on the bond side for some of the P&C portfolios of the company. Already at that time, the biggest share of the portfolios were given to the internal asset manager of Allianz, but there were some portfolios which were retained under management by the insurance company, mainly because they had like financial participations or there were derivatives that were done to hedge the liabilities. And so the first job was manage this portfolio and look into also the pricing, especially of derivatives, structuring, hedging, or yield enhancement transactions. And then this has evolved into supporting the distribution team and the network, because at that point in time, it was clearly before Lehman, insurance companies were also selling structured products with an insurance wrapper. And so we had to design the payoff and then go in the market and hedge this by buying the derivative or the corresponding structured product from the bank. So it was kind of fun because there were very exotic derivatives products back then. So you had to know a lot about the pricing, understanding also how these products perform in various market conditions and so on.
I always feel like, you know, so those more complicated roles, that's where you learn the most, obviously. You've got a lot going on to understand. Tell me, Francesco, you spent time in Italy. You also were in Germany with Allianz. Is that right? You spent time there as well?
Yes. Basically, after 5 years in Milano, I was offered a position in Allianz Investment Management. So in the meantime, my role evolved a bit because I was more engaged with capital management type of topics related to investment. So how to optimize the rating capital, for instance, and what became then the Solvency II model was initially clearly an internal economic capital model. That was anyhow used for analyst communication. So a lot of balance sheet optimization on the asset side. At that point in time, a global ALM and strategic asset allocation team was set up. I was covering different countries to analyze their liabilities, suggest ALM strategies and the proper strategic asset allocation. In that context, we also did quite important rebalancing action on the portfolio, especially for the life business, traditional life business, because interest rates were starting to decline. And in the meantime, we also had the euro crisis with the Greece restructuring, the troubles in Spain, Ireland, Italy. So we had a lot of fun. And then there was the whatever it takes from Mario Draghi. Obviously, Allianz had significant exposure in Europe, both on the asset and liability side. So it was very interesting and formative to look at markets and portfolios in those times.
So now we're up to 2013. You join up with Generali. Tell me about how that opportunity came about and what made that an exciting move for you.
Yeah, the opportunity came about because the former group chief investment officer of Allianz moved to Generali. In general, there was a big leadership change with the new CEO in place at that point in time, Mario Greco. The investment function of Generali had to be sort of rebuilt from scratch, especially when it comes to ALM, strategic asset allocation, investment reporting. The former CIO of Allianz, then in Generali, after a few months, offered me the opportunity to move there and to build the team in terms of ALM and strategic asset allocation, set up the models. So it was a very exciting opportunity to build something from scratch.
I always think it's interesting getting the chance to do something like that, something almost entrepreneurial, but out of a legendary company, and it's Generali's been around forever. To that end, for our listeners less familiar, can you tell us a little bit about Generali? What is it? And give us the quick tour of the business.
Yeah, basically Generali was born in 1831. Today, essentially, Generali is an integrated insurance and asset management group. We operate in 60 countries, mainly in Europe, but we have also a significant presence in Asia and Latin America. In the insurance space, we operate across all line of businesses in property and casualty and in life and health. Asset management, we have been growing a lot in the last few years. We made acquisitions and we have been growing also the third-party business. We are essentially more of a retail to small mid enterprises player in terms of customer base. So we are less so of a corporate and commercial player, but we do have also that business. And in terms of assets under management, we have today approximately 700 billion euro of assets under management and the banking assets.
So we talked about your career path within Generali. If you go back a couple of years in 2021, you became the group CIO for Generali. Tell us about your responsibilities then, Francesco, and how you spend your time.
Yeah, basically, as a group CIO, I run the investment function for the insurance portfolios. So my team is in charge of ALM, strategic asset allocation, asset management relationship, ESG integration, and investment planning and reporting. So the whole value chain on investments. So it's a global function, it's a global team. In terms of assets, we oversee the general account is approximately 350 billion euro. And then there is 100 billion plus of unit-linked portfolios.
So you talked about the breadth of your organization. You oversee the entire, you know, investment portfolio, but I'm curious about our business, private credit. I'd be interested to hear your perspective on private credit as an asset class at this point in the market cycle.
Yeah, that's top of our mind. The world has changed in terms of interest rates, of inflation. We were discussing until 18 months ago, every day in our internal meetings about low for long Japanese scenario. Now it's all gone, at least for the time being.
No, I've said I'm occasionally really happy that I'm not a rates trader. I mean, I think about it all the time, but I think I'd be very bad at it, Francesco. So I appreciate the point.
Yes, actually, when it comes to private credit, first to put things into context, today, approximately 7% of our portfolio in general account is allocated to private credit. This is at NAV invested, capital invested, a bit more if we take into account the commitments. Actually, this is more or less 40% of our private asset portfolio, because we do have also private equity, real estate equity, and real estate debt. When we look in private debt, essentially we have three classes. We have direct lending, real estate debt, and infrastructure debt, broadly speaking. And our objective is to have direct lending in our strategic asset allocation representing 50% more or less of our private debt allocation, and the rest going into real estate and infra debt. So when we look at the asset class, we look at it, A, as a way to provide yield enhancement. because clearly we want to extract some illiquidity premium, complexity premium, and also, of course, a bit of credit risk premium. That is the first objective. The second one is to provide a bit of diversification in terms of interest rate risk due to the floating nature. Of course, being mainly a life insurer, the vast majority of our bond portfolio is fixed rate. And so we have obviously a certain level of duration in the assets. And in a period like this, the private debt portfolio is giving us some upside in terms of repricing to higher interest rates. And then there is real estate and infrastructure. We also see this as, to a certain extent, a safer part of credit compared to traditional corporate credit.
No, that all makes sense. You guys are of such an institutional scale, you can partner with anybody. When you pick a private credit manager, what is important to you? What matters, Francesco?
Track record matters a lot. Sounds obvious, but track record means not just, let's say, average performance, but means especially ability to deal with downturns, because, let's say, the ability to deal with tough situation, workouts, recession is of paramount importance. The second element, of course, is alignment of interest. So for us, it's extremely important the manager has not only clearly a partnership approach and a long-term approach to us, so more partnership and less transactional, but also the amount of capital the GP is willing to put into the fund is an important sign for us of alignment of interest. And then clearly the level of expertise into the field is important. So we prefer to work in general with managers that have strong expertise in a certain sector of the market rather than generalists that do a bit of everything. Last but not least, also the market access, being able to perform also non-sponsored transaction and to have a specific and unique market access, and how the returns are generated, because we are also, let's say, an important LP investor in private equity. We work mainly with mid-market managers. And we don't like returns which are generated mainly out of financial engineering and leverage. So we want managers that really look into the operations of the company, improving efficiency, creating synergies, making companies growth in a healthy way, and not simply by adding leverage and playing, let's say, the cycle in terms of multiple expansion.
Well, and listen, that might have worked for the last 15 years, but we're in a different world now in terms of the ability for that math to work anymore. Well, let's talk about the world we're in right now and a little bit about macro. We're recording this in the fourth quarter of 23. Credit markets remain unsettled with inflation elevated and rates high, but things are feeling better than they did earlier this year. You and I have done this long enough to remember that current rates are much more normal than a decade of zero interest rates. How do you see the macro unfolding? Like, how do you actually see this playing out over the next couple of years from a rate perspective?
I believe that probably, let's say, rates are getting close to the peak. Clearly, there was a transitory component driven by energy that is fading away in inflation. But at the same time, inflation will settle at a level which is not what we used to have before. We and the central banks and the policymakers will have to get used to a level of inflation that will stay above central bank's target for a certain period of time. So that means that rates can normalize a bit, but will not go much, much lower. In addition, I think the clear topic is, let's say, deficit for countries, the term premium. I think we should not underestimate the risk of the curve steepening in a more material way, because all governments, especially in developed markets, keep printing a lot of debt, and central banks are no longer buying. So the market is, I think, reassessing in the real rate also the term premium and a bit of deficit and default risk for government bonds. I don't see the long end of the curve coming down significantly. Probably the short end could, but the long end, I don't expect it to come down significantly, even in, let's say, a recession scenario. Our main scenario is a soft landing, so we don't see, let's say, a credit crunch and a hard landing. It's difficult to see the economy running at full steam after such a large increase in interest rates. Still, employment, especially in the US, is very strong, but at some point, financial conditions will hurt the business and the consumers, and so we expect to see some slowdown in US and in Europe.
Well, it's interesting, Francesco. You know, we've been trained as investors recently on very quick-moving crises, right? COVID hit very quickly. Even the global financial crisis was incredibly fast, and on the other side, by historical standards, quick coming back. And the reality is, per your point, this interest rate impact takes time. You know, it takes time to flow through, and I think we're still seeing it play out. With that, Francesco, I'd like to move to the last segment of the podcast, which is something we like to call Best Ideas. This is where we're going to offer up something that's added value in our lives recently, Best Ideas, because it's our goal as investors to maximize exposure to those. Francesco, you're our guest. I'm going to ask you to go first. What is your best idea this week?
I tend to be more of a long-term investor. So I think that actually currently there is value in real estate stocks, especially. Is a bit of a contrarian view because we know that with rates rising, work from home trends, especially in certain markets, real estate values, especially listed real estate values, have been beaten. So let's say in a contrarian way is a sector to look at. There are listed real estate companies trading at heavy discount to their NAV, and several of these companies have good quality assets, diversified portfolios, low vacancy is an area to look at. Also on the private side, really when it comes to mezzanine debt, for instance, or even real estate equity, I think is the moment to look into that space.
Interesting stuff. And I agree. There's certainly value in real estate in complicated times. And we are certainly in one of those from a rates perspective. So with that, Francesco, I want to give you my best idea of the week. And as listeners know, I like to be inspired by my guests. So thinking about real estate and what's been happening in the real estate world, you know, we've been in this incredibly benign environment from a rates perspective for 15 years that's been incredibly supportive of real assets as a levered product. And things have gotten more complicated with the rates move. One of the things I wanted to understand better was the savings and loan crisis here in the United States. This podcast is an audio medium, so you can't see how old I am, thankfully. I was alive during the savings and loan crisis, but I wasn't investing. I was a kid. And there are some analogs to that environment in terms of disruption, in terms of the impact on regional banks that really matter to understanding today. I actually called a good friend, you know, my partner, Anders Fischer, former HPS Cast guest, and asked him several months ago for his recommendations on books about the savings and loan crisis. And so my best idea this week then is a book called The Great Texas Banking Crash by Joseph Grant, which is a firsthand account of the savings and loan crisis as told by a CEO and bank owner in Texas whose bank was seized by the FDIC during that crisis here in the United States. And what I think is most interesting about it is that it's been a really long time for most investors. You know, the most folks I work with in their investing lifetimes, they haven't actually seen rates moves like this. They haven't seen the impact on real estate and the learnings and the implications of what that means systematically. You know, I found real value in it. The book reads like a novel, even though it's an actual firsthand account from the manager. But I thought the lessons learned and the echoes of the past that we're seeing in terms of the disruption today helped me make a lot of sense of the current environment. So if you agree with Francesco and you think there's interesting opportunities in real estate, I will say tread carefully. And I think reading books like this to understand some of the past crises and experiences through them can be very useful. So best idea this week then, Great Texas Banking Crash by Joseph Grant. And with that, Francesco, it's time to wrap up for the week. I want to say sincerely, thank you for taking the time. Always a pleasure to chat. And we greatly appreciate your support of HPS.
Thank you, Colbert. My pleasure.
Thanks again to our guest, Francesco Martorana. Check out our show notes to learn more about Francesco and his work at Generali. And thank you also to our former HPS cast guest, Anders Fischer, who lent a helping hand with this week's best idea. He offered up the book, The Great Texas Banking Crash by Joseph Grant. You can also find a link to that in our show notes. This podcast was brought to you by At Will Media with HPS Investment Partners. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. The opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the host, Colbert Cannon, and the guest of each episode, and do not necessarily reflect the views of HPS Investment Partners.